What happens when perfect turns out to be, well, less than perfect? That's the challenge the sport of gymnastics faced a few years ago. The man who first took on that challenge helped to change the sport and the way it's watched by fans today. And no matter how big a gymnastics fan you are, you probably don't know his name. But Bill Littlefield does. Before he left on vacation, Bill prepared this story.
This could be the highlight of the compulsory event. She is one of the technically strongest, best gymnasts that I've ever seen.
She is Nadia Comaneci, and 40 years ago, at the 1976 Summer Olympics in Montreal, the tiny, slender Romanian gymnast was preparing to wow a worldwide audience. At the Games in Rio, gymnasts will once again be among the brightest, most celebrated stars. Some of them will no doubt earn appreciation similar to what Nadia Comaneci received in 1976.
Watch this. Beautiful rhythm, right to a handstand. Oh, look at that amplitude.
Kind of makes you wish you'd been there, doesn't it?
Gorgeous routine, beautiful, and the crowd loved it.
But no matter how spectacularly they perform, no matter how much appreciation they receive, none of the gymnasts in Rio will earn what Nadia got, a perfect 10. Which is not to say that on that day at the Games in 1976, Nadia Comaneci didn't deserve that score.
For her time and for that day, there was no one better and no one could have done it better.
That's Hardy Fink, and he should know. He was one of the judges that day. It was his first time judging an Olympic competition. Fink is also a former gymnast, and he's currently the director of education programs for the International Gymnastics Federation. But even as he was judging Nadia and finding no reason to deduct even the smallest fraction of a point from her performance, he was convinced that the perfect 10 was a flawed number and that the digits below it had problems too. That conviction began when Fink was still performing as a gymnast for Canada and watching his more accomplished competitor, Iso Kenmutsu of Japan.
He was so far ahead of everyone else with what he could do, and just in pure difficulty, the first triple twist on floor and this incredibly complex horizontal bar routine he did without any intermediate or intervening small elements.
Flourishes didn't count extra. In those days, the idea was to fulfill the required elements without making mistakes.
I could do the minimum requirement, and if I performed perfectly, I would have got a 10. And he did so much more than me. And all he could do was get a 10. He couldn't even get a 10.1 to show he was better than me.
Fink thought that was unfair. In fact, he told me he thought it was insane. And just a few years after Nadia's perfect 10 made her the darling of those 76 Olympics, Fink was proved right.
The 80s saw this tremendous spike in 10s.
Devorah Myers writes about gymnastics. She argues that the 10 was doomed by the proliferation of allegedly perfect performances.
The difficulty really, really escalated in the 1980s. And what I think happened was that, you know, the judges were, in a sense, searching for ways to reward the innovation, but all the scores are capped at 10.
Sometimes, as in the men's finals at the 1981 Gymnastics World Championships in Moscow, the judges backed themselves into awarding 10s.
I remember finals on pommel horse. Hungarian head judge, Hungarian gymnast, went up with a routine that everyone knew could be beaten and received a 10. First guy up on pommel horse, and then almost everyone that went after him in finals was better. So there was 10, 10, 10, 10. In 88, we had a three-way tie on pommel horse again with 10s. So it, you know, became a stupidity.
In response, Hardy Fink, who says he loves math, came up with a system that would, among other things, reward more difficult routines. Fink explained his and subsequent systems to me in much greater detail, but the show's only an hour long, so my summary will have to suffice. Anyway, the International Gymnastics Federation allowed Fink to test his system on the junior men's competition in Canada, but that was as far as it went.
Well, it was abandoned because ultimately the FIG at that period of time decided, you know, through a vote, not to adopt it. This matter had been resolved, and they were going to keep the 10.
Maybe that was in part because in an imperfect world, people watching gymnastics or anything else like to feel they might see something perfect. But Hardy Fink had kicked the door open, and as the 10s continued to mount up, they became less and less special. Eventually, inevitably, as Devorah Myers explains, the system was rejiggered into something resembling the Fink model.
A gymnast goes up, and they're going to be judged for two different things separately. So they're going to be judged for the difficulty of what they're doing, and they're going to be judged for how well it's done. So in the case of Simone Biles, her vault is worth a 6.3, and she'll go and do it. And one panel of judges make sure that she does that vault and gives her the difficulty credit for it. And the other panel, starting from a 10, takes deductions based on how well she does it. Those two scores are just added together.
That's the way it will work in Rio, but don't get used to the particulars of that system. Hardy Fink doesn't know how long it will last.
My guess is it'll continue for maybe two more cycles at most, because it's also going to collapse under its own weight. I don't think the rules have become more complicated as much by necessity as by short-term, quick-fix decisions that always had unintended consequences that then needed another quick-fix decision. So kind of the Band-Aid approach.
So perhaps the best strategy for spectators who are unlikely to entirely understand the scoring is simply to watch, sometimes with their jaws on their chests, and let the judges worry about the numbers. Because when I asked Evora Myers, who has written a book titled The End of the Perfect Ten, whether there might ever emerge a stable, permanent system for evaluating what those gymnasts can do...
I think it's gotten more stable.
She thinks it has, but she doesn't know, and Hardy Fink doesn't know either, and who knows more about it than he does. And you know what? It's not going to interfere in the least with my admiration for the way those women and men perform on the bars, the beam, the rings, the pommel horse, or the floor in any way whatsoever.
In case you had trouble recognizing the voice, that was Only a Game's very own Bill Littlefield.